The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Michael Jackson, Man in the Mirror. And you know who we are talking about in the mirror today. But before I get to him, now her, I have to say that this entire city, including every one of the major newspapers, jumping on board our crusade to stop the ghetto civil war, the societal suicide being committed disproportionately by our young black men, who aside from fighting over drug turf are apparently also killing each other because of misguided notions of courage and honor, some of it promoted by popular culture. And we'll devote a good chunk of the show to that topic today. There is a rally going on in high school, cited as having the highest incidence of violence in the city. So we'll be speaking with the council member who is charged with organizing that today. That'll be shortly. But first, we've got to start. I just want to give you two words that I think will tell you where I stand on this, this next topic. It's actually a name. Chris Humphreys. Remember Chris Humphreys? I tell you, I just can't get over the skeptical notion that Bruce Caitlyn Jenner's journey would never have happened, ladies and gentlemen. In my opinion, if it didn't work for his and or her as a premise for a presumably hugely lucrative reality phenomenon. My goodness, what a show this is going to be. What a show it already is. Bruce Caitlyn Jenner. Now, maybe my cynical view is rooted in the fact that everything this Kardashian clan has ever done in its explosive march to unprecedented fame has been the product of calculation and premeditation. I'm not being mean-spirited. But does anybody really believe that the former Bruce Jenner managed for years and years to completely hoodwink Chris Kardashian? Chris Kardashian, his perceptive, sharp, cunning wife, the mother manager of this fabulously successful brood of mega famous children and stepchildren. I mean, he wasn't hoodwinking a suburban house marm. He was fooling Chris Kardashian, who slept with him every night. I mean, doesn't that make you skeptical? Isn't it at least possible? At least possible. That this is another, albeit far more dramatic, public play for attention. That this is a historic, world-class exhibition that makes the barely consummated, though suitably lavish, highest-profile fake marriage in history pale in comparison. The marriage of Bruce's stepdaughter Kim Kardashian to the hapless former Brooklyn Net, the pro basketball player Chris Humphreys. remember the marriage of Chris Humphries and Kim Kardashian. It was smaller, but a similarly calculated media blitz. Remember how the NBA semi-star alleged that he had been used and abused by Kim Kardashian, used for promotional purposes for the wedding, the big televised wedding, big rating success. Only Chris Humphries was to be discarded after just 72 days, a 72-day marriage. He was thrown out the back door when the match proved unsuccessful commercially. So how do you top the admirably, awesomely successful personal promotion machine, Kim Kardashian, and her current, far more suitable, talented husband, Kanye West, in feeding the fame-making machine? One way you do it is what Bruce Caitlin is doing. No one really understands gender confusion, the whole notion of a woman trapped inside a man's body or vice versa. And I want to hear from you on this, 866-ERALDO. Are you skeptical as I am? I mean, it could be that this whole extraordinary episode involving the former Olympic gold medalist may bring new understanding, new sympathy to the mystery of gender confusion. Maybe everything that Bruce Caitlin is saying about wanting to be a role model for this population is from the bottom of his, her heart. It may indeed be a profoundly sincere, genuine transformation. But folks, come on. Come on. Doesn't what the New York Times gently refers to as this carefully calibrated rollout of this transition generate in you even the slightest bit of skepticism? I mean, look at the way they did it. First, you had the rumor mill going. That was for months and months, TMZ and Gawker, etc. So now they spread the rumor. What's the rumor? The most macho athlete ever is transitioning to being a woman. Then at the end of this period of months and months of speculation and teasing and tantalizing, you had Diane Sawyer's mega interview on ABC News. Huge ratings. Giant success. Today, what do we get? We get the celebrated photographer, Annie Leibovitz, taking a cover picture of the slinky, sexy, recently transformed, call me Caitlyn Jenner. And all of that is accompanied by an orgy, an absolute orgy of social media that is so gigantic, so omnipresent, that a producer like Marty or a host like me or Noam would be loath to ignore this story. It is everywhere. It is the front page everywhere. Like I said, this whole drama may be sincere. It may be a selfless sacrifice of privacy for the greater good. Although I must say that his decision not to be physically altered anytime soon does generate some questions about commitment. But this entire episode may be designed, like I said, as advertised, to help encourage the evolution of our understanding of gender identity and all that, as opposed to physical identity. But to the extent we take it seriously, we should never, ever forget that this whole premeditated mega saga has been created by the uber clever, savviest promoters of the 21st century, those Barnum and Baileys of reality TV, the hyper clever Kardashians. Trust me. Don't trust them. Dan, what's up? What are you thinking about, buddy? Thanks for calling 866-ERALDO.
Hi, this is Dan from Pennsylvania. I was on hold. Somebody put me on hold.
Well, you're on not on hold now. You're on the air and you're
hey,
live.
Hey, ERALDO, it's Dan from Pennsylvania.
Hey,
formerly
buddy.
Formerly from Bergen County, so I know your area.
Okay.
How you doing?
Excellent. What's on your mind?
Well, the transgender thing, I've been an active nudist for about 25 years.
Oh, send us a picture.
Yeah, right. Now, you don't want to see it. You need a telescope. But I thought I saw it all until about 2 years ago at Sandy Hook, which is a legal nude beach in Jersey.
I'm from that area, too, Monmouth County. I've been there.
There you go. And I saw a transgender, all woman, except for the man package, and I thought I saw it all, but this one surprised me.
Did it turn you on, Dan, or what?
Oh, no. Totally opposite. I think when you're going to do it, just go all the way or whatever. Don't go halfway. You know, you don't want to do it half-assed.
So to speak. Okay. Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much. Steven in Beacon, what's up, Steven?
Yes, Geraldo, how's it going?
So what's on your mind, buddy?
Okay, this whole thing with Jenner, it's like he's a publicity seeker. He was falling by the wayside, and he just needed to have something to special again. And I wouldn't be surprised if somebody pitches a show to him of starting an affair with OJ.
Hey, why not, buddy? Why not? Here's buddy John in New York. What do you think about John?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. Yeah, I find that, you know, this, I'm a conservative American, and I this whole business of transgender thing with Jenner is mystifying. However, can you really think that this all-American male hero would be willing to sacrifice the honors that he's received over the years as this great Olympic athlete for only a publicity purpose? It's just doubtful to me that he would do that.
All right. On that note of defending him, let me take our first break. I'm interested in your questions and comments. We'll get on to the heavier topics as we go. But what do you think? Is Bruce Jenner for real? Or are we all being taken for a ride here?
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
Welcome back, 25 minutes after. I just can't get over the skeptical notion that Caitlyn Jenner's journey would never have happened if it didn't work for the premise of a presumably hugely lucrative reality phenomenon coming our way, his program. If it was divorced from all that, I would be more open-minded, Noam Layden, but I have to tell you, and I understand how everybody wants to feel good about this guy coming on and going through this transformation and now crying to Diane Sawyer and on the front page of Vanity Fair as an example to all those with gender confusion and all the rest of it. But I just, having reported on that Chris Humphreys wedding, that's the nightmare that I keep seeing. Totally premeditated, totally calculated, pee-pee not getting cut off, all for show.
I think you're nuts. I really do. I mean, I think that he would
so to speak.
Yeah, so to speak, right. I think you're nuts because exactly what someone said earlier, a caller said, there's no way Bruce Jenner would go to all this trouble to create publicity for the Kardashian show for himself. He was doing quite well, by the way. It isn't for financial gain. He's very wealthy. He's been on the lecture circuit for years, ever since he won those medals back in the 70s.
Fame is addictive.
Of course it is, but you don't think he's recognized everywhere he goes just from the Kardashian show? He is. I just don't think you go...
As what? What role did he play in the Kardashians? Wasn't he the hapless...
He was. He was the hapless dad.
The doofus.
Yeah. They made him into a doofus.
He probably was like the statue there that people made fun of.
But I ask you this question. Why can't you believe he might have held on to this horrible secret for so many years?
Why can't you believe that a family as manipulative as this Kardashian clan...
Okay, wedding is one thing.
How do you top Kim and Kanye? Let's sit around and say, okay, what can we do? We can't go to Mars, right? We can't assassinate the leader of North Korea.
Right.
What are we going to do?
I don't know. I just don't think you go in that direction.
I got it. And do you believe that Chris Kardashian, this calculating, hyper brilliant, most manipulative woman in the history of Hollywood, in every way, and I'm not putting it down as a woman, if she were a man, I would be equally in awe of her absolute ability to make money, to take children who have some have talent. What's the talent of half of these Kardashians?
Zero. There's zero talent.
Zero talent.
Yeah.
And yet they are among the most famous people on earth. You know, like the kid, Kendall, I guess it is the model. She has, you know, she's gorgeous
right.
and all the rest of it.
They're all good looking.
But it's all about marketing and presentation. And, you know, I remember when, what's her name? Kim Kardashian broke the internet, quote unquote, with the showing her ass. And then maybe there was a glass balanced on. I forget what the shot was. Why can't you see that this is just the next step in that progression, that in the hyper accelerated 21st century social media world that we live in, this is just another Trump card?
Well, no doubt that he wants to make a buck doing it because he's going to have this 8-part series. He did the interview with Diane Sawyer.
So you're coming around.
No, I'm not, though. He's on the cover of Vanity Fair, but I think he knows.
Annie Leibovitz shoots him.
Yeah, right. I think he knows no matter where he goes, the cameras are going to follow him. So I might as well make money on it because there's going to be no privacy after this. But I don't want to ruin a feel-good moment, but you have his ex-wives say that he was cross-dressing back then. So it had nothing. If you fast forward to the Kardashians, you have to say, well, geez, if he was doing it all the way back then.
Jill, can you call us back or hold on? I want to get your take and the other callers. I want to finish the callers on the Kardashian phenomenon, which I think is mainly a media phenomenon. But I must pay attention to the cause that I think we are instrumental in highlighting, the civil war in the ghetto. After this.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866 Geraldo. 77 WABC.
Later gets her son ready for school. She says, on these streets, Chara, you've got to understand the rules. If an officer stops you, promise me you'll always be polite, and that you'll never ever run away. Promise mama you'll keep your hands inside. Where is it a gun?
Bruce Springsteen.
Is it a knife? Is it
a and I'm telling you, that's good advice. I mean, the song is 41 shots. But I swear to God, how you behave with cops is so critical. I told my sons, you've got to tell your sons. But the danger, the prime danger is not from cops. The prime danger is from neighbors and friends and rival gangbangers. This distorted sense of honor and courage, distorted, warped by popular culture in a way that I think is very destructive. There is, ladies and gentlemen, a civil war in the ghetto that could be, Elvis could sing about it all day long. So could Bruce. So could everyone. Now people are doing something about it, even as it's on the front page of every newspaper, everyone catching up to what's been our crusade. Front page of the Daily News, alarming murder stats released by the NYPD on Monday suggest the city might be losing its war on gun violence. Homicides are up nearly 20%, with guns accounting for 72% of this year's 135 murders. We're struggling with homicides and shootings, says the chief of department, James Neal. Joining us right now from the Bronx, a member of the city council is doing something about it. He's Andy King. We welcome him. And Andy, thank you for coming on. This is National Gun Violence Awareness Month. You have some of the children, the public school students there, dressed in orange. Why, council member, why dressed in orange?
Well, first, thank you again for allowing us to share a little bit of what we're doing here in the Bronx to combat gun violence and just violence in general. And the reason that we're organizing our students as well as our seniors and just community residents to bring this conversation to the homes. You know, a lot of times people ignore the fact that there's a crisis or anything happening until it lands on their doorstep. Well, we're tired of it landing on our doorstep, and we're speaking out and want to engage in corrective behavior and conflict resolution so we don't have to attend another funeral, not to have another rally, not to have a mother sitting down crying because their son or daughter has been lost to gun violence.
Well said, Andy. Well said, Councilmember Andy King. Now, you're at Evander Childs High School. Tell me what the event will be in a half hour.
Well, we're organizing our young people to come together to speak out. We'll be giving out information on statistics of how crime has had and gun violence has had an impact on our community. We're standing in front of Evander Childs High School campus. Unfortunately, this high school has been labeled with having number one violence activities that have occurred over the last school year in the city of New York. So we're bringing awareness to the students there, to saying that you must change your behavior. We're saying to those individuals who participate in secure risk behavior that you need to change, and we're going to give you the structure, we're going to give you the support to make sure that you have options to make better decisions other than joining a gang, other than hurting your friend or your sister, other than disrespecting your classmate, other than disrupting your community.
New York City Councilmember Andy King is on board right now. He is at Evander Childs High School in the Bronx off Gun Hill Road there. They have more incidents of violence on that high school campus than any other in the city. Soon the teenagers themselves will be speaking. What do you expect to hear, Andy?
Well, I expect the students to tell their peers, we have to do this differently. We have to do this better. We have to engage in better behavior. We need to join positive programs, such as the Bronx Youth Empowerment Program, or Boys and Girls Club, or engaging in after-school programs that allow us to form camaraderie as opposed to hatred behavior. And that's what I'm expecting to hear from them, because a lot of them are fed up by the intimidation, by the bullying, and by the disruption, because they intend to go to school each and every day to learn, not to go in there and figuring out what incident am I going to have to deal with today.
Let me ask you this. I mentioned how there's a distorted notion of courage and honor that I think is being being led and encouraged in some ways by popular culture. A lot of people are making a lot of money with hip-hop and so forth. I mean, the dark side of hip-hop, not all of it, obviously. Mm-hmm. Now, you're going to have kids dressed in orange. Are they really going to dress in orange? What's the significance of that? And will they have the courage to dress in orange, given the fact that the vast majority will be looking at them saying, what are these kids doing? Where are they at? What are they? Are they squares? Are they turncoats? How are you going to do that, Andy?
Well, I go back to the civil rights movement, and the bus boycott in Alabama. You had five people sitting in the room saying they were sick and tired of being sick and tired. And they made change, and they changed their behavior, and they engaged in activity, allowed others to change how they interact with society. That's what today is going to be about. No, these young people are already dressed in their orange. They're all lining up, and they're coming out right now to tell the world, listen, the color of orange was selected due to the fact of the young sister who was killed in Chicago, Hadiya Pendleton. And the family chose the color orange because orange is the color that hunters wear when they go out hunting. So the next person knows, hey, listen, that's if I see orange,
that's
a human
it.
Being.
So it's not orange is the new black. It's the hunting, the neon orange hunters wear so they don't get accidentally shot down.
Right. So that's why this color orange is that type of symbolism. That
wow.
When you see me in orange, hey, I'm a safe person. I'm somebody who's not a threat.
Wow.
Hey, look out for me. Save
that's
my
intense.
Life.
Let me ask you this, council member. Are you getting enough support from Mayor de Blasio in this effort?
Well, Mayor de Blasio is totally 100% against gun violence, as well as the speaker, Melissa Viverito, who I met with yesterday, to tell her that, hey, this is the activity that I'm engaging in. People are all behind, how do we change the culture? How do we put our money to help young people do different things as opposed to we're not having options so they left to their own vice?
Let me ask you this. In terms of that campus, that Evander Childs High School having so much violence, do they search the kids as they come into the school the way they used to last year or so?
Well, they do have metal detectors. And I don't want to give a perception that the children are bad. There are a number of students who are just disruptive. There are a number of young people who are part
of... What about gangs within the school?
There are a number of individuals who are engaged in that activity and have, as the police officers have always said, I've learned from the precinct, you'll get 10% of the people who occupy 90% of your time, and those 10% are disruptive. So you have 90% of that campus that is doing right, but you just have that 10% that gets all the attention. So we're trying to help those that we've identified them, and we're looking to create a scenario and a program for them, because at the end of the day, they're still teenagers. It's not like they're...
What about stop and frisk? How do you personally, Andy King, council member, New York City, how do you feel about stop and frisk?
Well, stop and frisk is a violation of their own policy. If you stop, question, and frisk, that's the thorough policy itself.
So is that okay with you, stop, question, and frisk?
Yeah. If you stop someone...
You want to bring it back? I mean, do you think that that's an antidote to what you're seeing there?
I don't think it's the total antidote. I think the antidote is giving people the options to survive and create opportunities for themselves. If you put money in programs, if you put money in economics, if you put money in and that allows people to deliver for themselves, then they're not going out trying to hurt the next person. The parent is home. And I give you this. I am currently right now, I've drafted a resolution and I've drafted legislation to the state saying, listen, for our teens, we need to not only offer them options, but parents, you have to be parents. So if you're 17 years and under, and you're founded with a gun, do you know what your parent is going to be called on the carpet? Because you have to be a parent. Because you are in poverty doesn't mean that you're not a parent. Or because you're wealthy doesn't mean you pass your child off to somebody else to take care of your child.
Well, are you a dad yourself?
Yes, I am.
And how old are yours?
My daughter, well, my daughter's an adult right now. She's 27, but I have a granddaughter that lives with me who is 6, who I make sure that I do all I can for
her. I like that, Grandpa. Yeah. I like that. It takes one to know one.
Yes.
Okay, Andy, listen, anything we can do to help with this effort, don't be a stranger. We want to get on board. We don't want to just complain about this issue. We want to do something about it, and I appreciate your efforts today.
Thank you so much, and God bless.
You too. You too, man. Let me take a quickie here. Here's Willie in New Jersey. What's up, Willie? What are you thinking about?
How you doing? I called yesterday, and you know, when you had that thing, this goes on all the time over here. Somebody's blocking your signal. I don't know what's going, you know. But I wanted to talk about, you know, the guy you had on is a brilliant guy.
Just now.
Wonderful guy. You know, I'm the grandfather of four mixed race black kids, whatever you want.
Oh, I remember you, Willie, yeah.
Anyway, my daughter puts a lot of time in with these kids. And yesterday, one, Kimadi, received a presidential award.
Oh, congratulations.
You know, I mean, you know, they live in California, but a little different circumstances. But it's not the greatest area in the world either. But I grew up on Staten Island in West Brighton, near the West Brighton Projects. And 9mm was the music of the night, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I came to Jersey to get away from, you know, more so for because...
Well, you know, one thing you said, I got to take a break. I got to take a break, Willie. I appreciate your call. There's no substitution for good parenting. That's why I am in such dismay over the decline and destruction of the ethnic family. I mean, how can you have a situation, and it's impossible, and we haven't talked a lot about it, where only 1 in 4 black families, 2 in 4 Latino families, 3 in 4 white families have a dad in the home.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
The ghetto is committing suicide. There is a civil war going on, and we must do our best to disarm the combatants. There is a misguided sense of what it is to be brave, what it is to be a man of honor. You have turf war going on over the sales of drugs. You have the disappearance, the invisibility of positive role models. We have to be proactive at Evander Child High School in the Bronx, even as we speak. The kids are wearing orange to denote their own concern for this epidemic of violence. We'll be back.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, humiliation, obligation to my nation. All the children, that's what the world is today.
walking around with their heads in the sky. City's aflame in the summertime.
No.
Is that old beat going to be going on these days? How many New Yorkers will have to die by gun violence before we bring back stop and frisk? That's just not me talking. That's every editorial board in the city now getting on board. We are killing each other. There's a ghetto civil war. Young black men at an unprecedented rate targeting others. This is a misguided notion of what it takes to be a man. You stake out your turf. You defend it as if you were fighting ISIS. But it's not ISIS. It's Evander Childs High School. It's Bed-Stuy. It's the South Bronx. This morning in Harlem, a lady stabbed to death. Didn't you report that?
Lenox Avenue, yep.
Enough already. We've got to recognize that crime is like untreated cancer. You don't deal with it, it metastasizes. It is time to fight back. It is time to take back the streets. 866 Geraldo, what are you thinking about? In Harlem, Duke is on the line. What are you thinking about, Duke?
Hello, hello, Rondo. Great pleasure to talk to you.
Same here.
The thing, these kids can't read. They can't read. All those kids out in the street, all these rioters, these people can't read. And I know that because I taught at a correctional facility for a while. And I was supposed to teach them kind of, you know, how to write a little bit. And what I found out was that most of them didn't even know the alphabet.
No way.
I ended up teaching them the alphabet. And I would say 90% of them are like that. Every so often you have a gem, you know, I had a guy who'd been a drug dealer and he wrote some wonderful fiction about fish caught in the goldfish bowl, I'm sorry. But anyway, that's what I find.
So why can't they read, Duke? Why not?
The educational system has failed us from slavery right on. In other words, I'll give you another example. When they established segregation, they said separate but equal. We never got equal.
Of course not.
Even without equal, we created universities and created doctors and lawyers and dentists and all kinds of people. We did educate ourselves, but we never had the money. Even in New York, you get, I think it's $18 for each kid a day or whatever in Queens, but you only get $8 in Harlem per kid.
I hope that's not true. I don't know it to be a fact, but let me ask you this. What do you see? Is this a gang thing that you're seeing out your window?
Well, because they can't read, they can't attach themselves to the culture, the total culture. They're out of it. So they have, as you say, created this society like the Wild West or something like that.
It is. That's one thing I'm urging young people to hear me. And Duke, you're a very smart man. I want you to call back whenever you feel like it. Thank you. Creating this. See, I don't put them down with some of these pejoratives. I think I understand what's going on as the kind of person who grew up with a who, what are you looking at kind of chip on my shoulder. I get some of the motivation. The motivation is, Duke used the word misguided. There is a misguided sense of honor and courage also. It is a Wild Westian kind of thing, drawing guns, shooting it out, and then going, surviving the shootout. And then going to wherever you hole up till the heat dies down. Wow, you see Freddie. Yeah, Freddie was popping and this one was jiving and he ran and you see him hopping. I can see them. I can see them. I experienced a tiny fraction of that
I don't pretend to be a hardcore at all. The way these kids are so hardcore now. But this is so, this energy, this courage. What you need is for this courage to be invested in trying to change your situation. It takes courage, quiet courage, to raise the children that you bring into the world. It takes a quiet kind of courage to create a family and to work. And sometimes to swallow your pride to work at a job that you think is beneath you. I get how hard it can be. Now, Duke talks about they can't read. I bet you if they went to a charter school, they could read. John in Queens, what's on your mind? John, thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing? The other guy who called earlier saying he can't read, that guy's out of touch. I'm from South Jamaica, you know, I'm from the whole environment everywhere, you know, if you're dealing with urban communities, all you have is welfare, Section 8 housing. So in that type of communities, you have people that's poor, they have no income, so there's a lot of single parents who are trying to work, but they got kids, they can only do so much because they're single parents, you know, so...
But where are the dads? I hear you, and I want to talk to you. I got a lot to ask you. But don't you fault the absent dads?
I was about to bring that. I fault a lot of these dads that are present, too, because there's a lot of dads that are present that aren't real father figures. You got a lot of guys that these single parents hook up with, the two-time offenders in prison, and they come home, they're ready, gangbangers are ready, or drug dealers are ready when they got locked up. So what do? When it's time to come home, they can't afford to go back to jail. They need income. So they use the kids. They teach them how to cook the crack. They teach them how to shoot the guns in different alleyways or downstairs in some sort of basement or something like that. They teach them how to shoot, and they pick up, drop off packages, and they give the kids money. That's their way of income for everybody in those type of neighborhoods who are poor and misfortunate.
And now tell me about yourself, John. Tell me about yourself. How are you not in jail? How are you not falling prey to that? Or have you had experience with that?
Well, I experienced jail, but I had a father who was who showed me God, basically. You know what I mean? I had a higher faith, a higher calling, God, Jesus Christ. And because of that, I already... was street smart already, so it takes to be disciplined, you know?
And so what are you doing now to be on the straight and narrow, or are you?
Well, I work two jobs. I work DOT.
God bless you.
I work for the town as well.
God bless you.
I take care of my kids. I'm not on no government program. I got to do what I got to do for me and my family. But a lot of people, they look at that as, that takes too much time, too much effort, short money, and a lot of women, they don't have those type of father figures around, or husband material guys who's willing to put that effort in, so they compromise and they deal with the guys that's, you know, lazy, hanging around in the street, or just come home from jail. So
how worried are you?
To have those
I hear you. How worried are you about gun violence affecting the people
worried.
You
I mean,
love?
I got to pack myself because I live in the same area. It's almost like you got the mentality where a lot of people envy what you have. If you have something like you got an S550 or a nice Benz, and they don't really know you like that, well, they're gonna rob you. You ain't home from work, you know, or you're not around.
So let me ask you this, John. Honestly, I got it. Are you packing? Do you carry?
I carry at home. I don't carry out all the time, you know, only necessary because you type of cops.
Or something's happening,
you know,
with
cops,
you.
The cops is like, yo, no one carries.
All right, so wait a second. John, listen to me. When you sometimes carry, don't you worry about a cop stopping you, questioning you, and frisking you?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know what I mean?
So what do you do? Like, what do you do?
If you call the cops, a lot of these cops are working for these guys in the street. So they'll tell these other people who told on you, and that's a war right there. A lot of them, they try to make quotas themselves, and, you know, it's like a... very racially
but John, if you're carrying, don't you think that it's a recipe for disaster, that you're going to end up back in jail, that the hard jobs that you are working, the legit jobs to support your family?
God came in on your day for your possessions in your house. I don't carry outside of the street. You know what I mean? So that's just common sense. You know, what are you going to do? They come inside and you break in your home because there's a lot of breakers every day all the time. What are you going to do? Just, they hold you gunpoint.
How old are you, John? How old are you?
Common sense.
How old are you?
I'm 34.
34 years old. All right, John. Again, I say this to people who I am interested in their lives because I think there's lessons to be learned. Don't lose my number.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
Welcome back, 25 minutes after 11 o'clock. This is the headquarters, ladies and gentlemen, of a new movement to disarm this city, to bring back stop and frisk, to bring back understanding, summer programs. School is almost out. You know what that means. That means an awful lot of young men and women, of course, but an awful lot of young men, teenagers on the streets with not much to do as the weather approaches that oppressive, humid, hot, incendiary time. We've got to stop the civil war in the ghetto. Got to stop urban suicide. Got to reduce the gun violence before it really reaches epidemic proportions. We don't want this to become Baltimore. Yes, we understand that it's only 15 of the city's, 70-odd police precincts. That's an awful lot, 15. 15 police precincts is a good hunk of this city. A good hunk of this city. It's about a quarter of this city. So the other three quarters can bask in the brave new world of peace on earth. While one quarter goes to hell in a handbasket, I'm not willing to let that happen to New York. Are you? Are you willing to let that happen? Are you willing to let this gun violence become what it was in those old days? Those bad old days? You know what that's going to do to commerce in the city? You know what that's going to do to real estate values in the city? Why don't we reinvigorate those summer programs? I remember when I was a kid, I don't know, do they still send youngsters to fresh air,
sure,
fun kinds of camps?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Wouldn't that be, let the Clinton Foundation, I don't know what they're doing with all that money, but this is a good efficient way to spend some of that money instead of $400 million on expenses. You could send, with all that money, you could send half of some of these neighborhoods to fresh air fund camps. And I remember they used to play basketball everywhere on courts that were provided by the city and all that. I don't see much of that anymore. I don't see much of an investment in the infrastructure of humanity, of young humanity in this city. We have to take a proactive approach. We have to stop ignoring the problem. We have to make this the civil rights issue of our era. Police violence against young black men is a symptom of the problem. It is not the problem. The problem is the ghetto civil war. The problem is this distorted sense. And it occurred to me yesterday, this whole notion of honor and courage that I'm talking about, because I want those young men to know that I respect them. There is a misguided notion of honor and courage that is being perverted into a kind of suicide where you have the Bloods and the Crips and this one and that one and this crew and that crew. And this one's got this many guns and that one's got that many guns and they want that piece of turf and they want this piece of turf and they have the courage to go and kill the other ones and get themselves killed and give their mother tragic tears. We can't let the city go back to that. Mayor de Blasio, wake up now. Stop it now. Stop it now before that becomes your legacy. that your legacy is 15 police precincts become killing grounds. Is that where we're headed in New York City? To the killing ground days? 866 Geraldo, I'm going to get to your calls. Thank you for your patience. We'll be right back.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
38 minutes after 11 o'clock on this second day of June, another raw day. You can't see the very top of the Empire State Building, but yesterday you couldn't see the building at all, just a block away from our studios here high above Madison Square Garden. The city itself going through this uncharacteristically raw kind of biting weather. I don't like it. I was already seduced into my late spring, early summer mode. And the weather, Mr. Layden, what's in store for us?
Well, the good news is tomorrow, 70 sunshine.
That's perfect. 70 sunshine is the kind of day where there should be no violence because everything is so perfect. Not that any day deserves bloodshed. But what we are afraid of is that we'll become like other big cities, like Chicago. Chicago, a city one-third the size of ours. They've had a total of 172 homicides year-to-date, 172, of which 146 were shootings. We've had, I think, with that knifing death of the woman in Harlem, 124 as compared to 172. We don't want to be Chicago. We don't want to be Cleveland. We don't want to be Detroit. We certainly do not want to be Baltimore with 12 times the homicide rate that we are currently experiencing. But a smart mayor, a smart leader can see a trend. And this is a trend. This is not an anomaly. Mayor de Blasio has now been in office 1 year and 5 months, right? 1 year, 5 months. This is a trend now. Stop it before it's too late. Here's Jack in New Jersey. What's up, Jack?
Yeah, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I was actually just thinking that it was ironic that at the beginning of the year, before my first comment, that at the beginning of the year we had a bunch of days without any killing.
Any at all. We had a full week, wasn't it? Even longer
in
than
January.
In January.
Also, I was thinking, you know, that we mentioned about Chirac yesterday, that maybe you should get the Petraeus to, get extra troops on the ground in New York.
That's a wistful commentary. I understand the sarcasm. Chirac, if you missed it, is Spike Lee's new movie. He's filming right now. We're trying to get started filming in Chicago. Chirac is the combination of Chicago and Iraq. It's about the bloodshed, and I totally applaud it. I think it's way, way overdue that leaders like Spike Lee point out the result of extolling the virtues of violence. It's not just in music. It's not just in movies. It is also in real life. Chirac. We don't want to be whatever the combination of New York and Iraq or Afghanistan. We don't want to be New Ghanistan. Gino, our buddy in the Bronx. What's up, Gino?
As usual, Geraldo, you're overlooking the actual problem. The actual problem is that we have a bunch of gutless politicians who cater to the lowest common denominator, who always side with the scum that say it's somebody else's fault. It's never their fault. I grew up in this neighborhood that I'm still living in, and I've seen it deteriorate into one of the worst ghettos in New York City. Why? Because the attitude has changed. We had working class people, we had working poor, and we even had some that graduated into the middle class. But when you have kids who don't even bother to graduate from high school, who don't even bother to get any kind of work experience, who don't want to do a damn thing other than sell crack, use crack, or gain money from selling crack, then how the hell do you expect the taxpayer, the biggest sucker on the face of the earth, to want to spend trillions of dollars more to solve a problem that is unsolvable? The bottom line always is, The individual offender has to be willing to change. They got to change their ways, as the song Michael Jackson you played at the start of the show. There was nothing I could do as a probation officer, nothing that Ron, the parole officer, could have done in his 24 years, or especially the correction officer who's got 20 years experience, if the politicians themselves don't change and if the offender doesn't change. If you have this mentality that you'd rather sell a vial of crack for $5 a pop rather than flip hamburgers at McDonald's for $5 an hour, one is legal, the other is not. One is going to get you either to prison or to the grave, and you don't get that through your thick skull by the time you're 17, 18, or 21 years old. You are hopeless. You are beyond redemption and beyond rehabilitation. It's wasted money to go and waste it on you at that point. You got to get these people when they're young. An ounce of prevention is worth $1 trillion worth of cure.
I got it. I got it, Gino. Well
yeah,
said, as
it.
Usual.
I hope you do.
I got it. I got it. In Bronxville, Maria's on the line. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Geraldo. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I was encouraged to call when I heard that gentleman speak about teaching in a correctional facility and what he found there, you know, people who could not read or
right.
did not know the alphabet. And I want this call to be about the young lady that I had the privilege of helping a couple of years ago.
Sure.
I don't want it to be about me, but I got to give you a little Cliff Notes version of where I come from. First-generation American, poor background. Went to college on a Regents scholarship and spent 25 years as a criminal defense paralegal. But from when I was in high school, my parents always taught me that no matter where I go in life, no matter how I, you know, ascend in the economic scale, never forget other people. And I found I had a facility for tutoring. I tried teaching. Too much for me, but I did tutor, and I think one of the things that we really have to do with regard to our politicians and the people we come in contact in our lives and also ourselves, we have to raise our expectations, because what I did was I went in a pro-literacy program, and I was given as a student and a 26-year-old female, single mom, who was completely illiterate, even though she did have a high school diploma. And to be quite frank with you, I thought I was out of my depth. I thought I couldn't help her. But you know what? By bridging the gap between the two of us and making her realize that she and I, although we may not look alike, we came from the same place. And she did 90% of the work, because I can't...
Well, how did it work out before I ran out of time, Maria?
Okay.
How did it work out?
It worked out beautifully.
What's she doing now?
She is now... I tutored her for 5 years. She is now a... works as a manager of a retail store, and she was actually able to take her driver's test and now drive. And when I got her, I would show her CAT on a paper, and she would say window. And
I got you. Well, congratulations to both of you, Maria.
You know what? She did it all because she wanted to do it. But you know what? We've all got to help each other, and we can't expect the other person to do it. We have to do it.
Amen. Thank you, Maria. I appreciate the call.
Live, local, on it. 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
6 minutes to 11 o'clock on this Tuesday, the second day of June, Aurora Day. I've got a couple of minutes here for a couple of final calls. He is Dan in New Jersey. What's up, Dan?
Yeah, first of all, kudos to Gino's call. You really stole my thunder. But I listened to Michael Myers yesterday. And when I listen to people like him, he might be well-meaning, but he could not possibly be more wrong. They have totally wasted another generation of young black men. I think they need to step outside their own narrow world and look at things the way other people look at them, the people they want to help, the people they want to put up the money and pay the taxes to get out of the situation. Got to look at the way they look at it.
Well, I think that is definitely part. I appreciate the call, smart man. I appreciate the whole notion that there has to be some introspection, that people have to look at themselves and their situation. But I think that a lot of it is when you criticize a culture, it's very easy, A, to generalize, and I try not to. It's very difficult not to. And B, it's very easy when people are generalizing about you to become defensive. And I don't think that either of those things are particularly helpful. That's why when I say about stop and frisk, and I know, Noam, that you disagree with the concept of it, I keep going back to how many lives have been saved by aggressive policing, by preventive policing. How many people have made it into adulthood where they have an opportunity to become something? I understand that it can be intrusive, but I prefer intrusion over murder. Dan and another Dan in New Jersey. What's up, buddy? Yep, he's gone. Do you want to say something about it?
About stop and frisk? I don't know if I have enough time to tell you how I feel about stop and frisk. But I think that bail bonds guy that called us last week said it best when he said he was just walking down the street. He owns a business, and he gets thrown against a police car, and he's doing nothing except walking down the street. There's just got to be a better way. Can't single out an
entire
community.
Like what? You want those scanners they use at the airport? Have everybody in the hood walk through the scanner when they're going to the CVS or the
But the assumption can't be an entire community is guilty of a crime when they're just walking down the street trying to get to work, school, whatever it may be.
More on this tomorrow.